Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Tracy.
And I'm just plain Bill.
And I don't know if anybody can hear us tonight.
Oh, really? Okay, fine. Okay.
Streaming.
Well, that's all right. I can hear you.
And it's weird because I couldn't even get in on my landline. It was busy, but I had to call in on my cell phone, which is bad news for all of us. I don't
know.
An hour's worth of time on this phone.
Geez, you know, I got a busy signal the first time I tried calling in, so I put it on redial, and then it hooked up. You might want to try your landline again.
Well, I don't think I can get in now that I'm with the phone.
No, I see. Well, I don't know.
So. Well, we're just gonna have to play it by ear. Maybe I can put on a piece of music that'll take some time.
Okay.
And go off and come back on.
Or keep yourself on the cell phone and try dialing in on your landline.
No, because it'll give me a busy signal. Because supposedly I'm the only one supposed to be able to get on.
Yeah.
You know, to that host phone.
Well, I don't know. I really don't know.
Good evening, Bill. How the hell are you?
I am doing really good. It is a calm and peaceful winter night here in Hayfork.
Well, it's January and there's not a cloud in the sky, so guess what the temperature is doing here?
Yep. Okay. Down in the sub-zeros.
It will be by tonight. It'll be under zero by tomorrow night. So,
You
know, we'll have to see what's going on here.
Yeah. You betcha.
I wonder if I'm still trying to figure out what's going on here, folks. So, bear with me just a few seconds.
You betcha.
I'm wondering if they've got a problem with this. We've had a problem on several occasions getting things going.
Yeah.
So, are you near your computer?
I am.
See, I don't know if I can't because I only use hands-free, and then I could type. Could you put up on Twitter and see if anybody can hear us?
Okay. Hang on here. Let me see here. I'm going to put the phone down. Hang on a sec.
That's what I would add to you. All right. While Bill is putting that little piece of information up there, I'm going to...
Okay.
Quest up there. All right. So we'll find out what's going on with that.
Yep.
In the meantime, last week when we got in, Scott Brown had just been elected senator from Massachusetts.
Yes.
So we were all having fun and joy and particularly good evening. And then, of course, all the armchair pundits got into the fray and decided what it all meant.
Yes.
And, of course, as far as the Obama administration, apparently electing a Republican to the Kennedy Massachusetts seat meant that the electorate was still mad at George Bush.
Hello?
Well, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So, I don't understand exactly how, you know, the Obama puts two and two and comes up with negative six.
I don't know.
But, you know, hey, what the heck? All right. So let's talk a little bit about some of the repercussions. Because there's one thing that just drives me absolutely crazy. All right.
Yeah.
If Scott Brown became the 41st senator,
yes,
that meant that the Democrats continued to hold a majority, 59 seats of the Senate, yes?
Yes, absolutely. Well, 57 with one independent and one socialist, but yeah.
Okay. So the question becomes, exactly what could the Democrats not do with 59 votes that they could do at 60?
Let me see. A word beginning with F.
I was going to think of a word beginning with a C.
Oh, really?
Yeah, as in, cram it down our throat.
Yeah. Yeah, but they don't have a lot of opportunities to do that, as I pointed out last week. The only opportunity that they have is for the House to pass a Senate bill in toto. They can
and
do that.
That has been my fiction all along.
Yep.
But apparently,
they don't have the votes.
They don't have 59 votes to do that.
They don't have 218 votes.
They don't have 51 votes.
Votes
to do reconciliation.
That's exactly right. Well, they may have 51 for reconciliation, but reconciliation will only work on the tax side of that. They cannot pass health care as it is currently envisioned under reconciliation. They can only pass the tax measures.
Well, that would appear to be a problem for them.
Well, you wouldn't think, except that then they don't get health care. And they get bloodied. I mean, they get absolutely devastated in this year, in both the House and the Senate.
Because we are the party of reality.
Yes.
Let's take it out of the realm of possibilities, back into the realm of reality. And we now know that healthcare is dead.
Yes.
Healthcare is dead. Ding dong, the witch is dead. Look at how it's
dead. Yeah, they're ding dong, the witch is dead. Yes, indeed.
Yes. Healthcare, as far as I'm concerned, healthcare is dead. It is dead for any period of time.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that they're going to be able to do anything about it.
Mm-mm.
Now, the question is, how much of the remaining part of the Obama agenda is likely to be possible?
Okay.
All right.
Here's my take on that.
Okay.
Offer your take. Cap and tax is dead. That is done. Stick a fork in it, it's toast.
I agree.
Card check is done. Dead.
I'm absolutely agreeing with that.
No?
No.
I don't see how they get that passed.
I think they're gonna sneak it in.
With what?
Or at least try.
Well, they may try. And I suspect that at that point in time, same thing happens. They get buddied so bad that it isn't gonna be worth the candle to them. At least I don't think it is. Amnesty is dead. I think that Barack will bring that up tomorrow. He'll say he wants it, and that's going to be like, I don't think so. No, we aren't going to do that. You know, we are not going to shoot ourselves in the foot or the head. I can't think of a single piece of legislation that he can get through other than extending the Bush tax cuts. That he can do.
All right, we have a caller.
Aha!
Area code 267.
Ooh.
I don't know what area code 267. Caller from area code 267. state your name and state your business.
Hi, my name's Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mark!
Hi, Tracy. How are you?
How are you, dude? Long time, never talked.
Yeah, that's my area. This is my area code on my cell phone. I'm sorry. It's a Philadelphia area code.
Very good. So what's so what's happening tonight, Mark?
Not much. Just hanging out.
All right. So what's
what
on your
mind? Talking about? I heard you talking about Obama's policies in general.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now,
I guess would
everybody
go ahead.
Wait a second. Because according to the system, we're live.
Cool.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I don't want anybody to go anywhere. I'm gonna put on, let me see, what should I put on? let's see how fast I can do this.
Do we all talk at once or
no, Mark, hang on. We're having some technical difficulties.
Sure.
You ready? Music's gonna go on. I'm gonna drop off and we're gonna see if I can come back on by the time the music is over.
And if not, Mark and I are gonna have a nice conversation.
Cool.
All right. Here we go.
So, Mark, you wanted to talk about general policies.
No. I heard you guys talking about that earlier. But I'll talk about anything. I don't care. But I mean, I guess lately I've been thinking about the with Barack Obama. Man, it's amazing we can even get any sleep. There's so much to think about. But yesterday I was thinking. I mean, I did a post on my blog site yesterday, and I've been thinking about this whole thing with the, the Sheikh Mohammed, this ill-fated decision to try that wingnut in New York City.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I can tell you, I mean, I'm about an hour and a half from New York City, but close enough that, the people the whole nation was, obviously hurt, but I'm very close to the, there's a lot of people in this area that lost a lot of loved ones, The point is, would you agree that that's a completely ill-fated decision to try this guy in a civilian court?
It's absolutely, part of the process. There's, first of all, Barack Obama believes that his America, and I'm not certain which one it happens to be in, it's, in some alternate reality, his America, can handle criminal behavior of terrorists in the court system perfectly fine. Now, I'm certain, almost without a doubt whatsoever, that Barack Obama is a firm believer in the courts being racially biased against minorities. Don't know that he's ever said that, but I'm almost certain, given the fact that he's been Alinsky and Reverend Wright, apostle of acolyte,
and the Warren courts too.
That is his particular point of view. So I don't know how he thinks that a minority can get an even stake in the court system. But, of course, we already know because Eric Holder says no matter what happens, they're not going anywhere. So
exactly.
The question is, if he's acquitted
– he's already tried them, right?
Right. He's been tried as far as Barack Obama and Eric Holder are concerned. And he's not going to leave the court – he's not going to be let loose. So the question is, why have the farce of the trial, except for
circumvention,
prove to the world that the American justice system is a rigged system, incapable of actual justice?
Well, you could argue also that on my post yesterday, we don't have to get that technical if you don't want, but I wrote about the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, the whole Miranda versus Arizona decision in 1966, all these things that there's there's completely, absolutely legally able to put these people in tribunals and everything else constitutionally.
Yes.
But going back to your point is that I think, well, we all know this. Obviously, it will give the terrorist a public format to spew out things about America,
mm-hmm.
how bad America is, everything else. And it, according to what I'm hearing, with the lawyers, they'll be able to get all sorts of information brought out on the table. In other words, if there's any dirty laundry about the Bush administration, I can assure you it will be leaked out.
Well, I, mm-hmm. you know, here's my general opinion as far as the trials are concerned. One, I'm not convinced they're going to happen. At this particular point, I'm probably only giving it about a 40% chance of happening. I don't even give it a
yeah.
chance. I don't give it about a 40% chance.
Mm-hmm.
If it happens, mm-hmm. I think it's going to fall apart before they actually get. Who is banging? Don't bang things. Whoever's banging.
That was me. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm cooking
chicken
something.
Dinner is fine. You know.
That's what I'm doing.
Good.
If it happens, I don't think we'll get past the motion stage, the pre-trial motion stage, because, you know, the first motion that's going to be made is going to be, you know, dismissed for failure to follow constitutional requirements such as the Miranda. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
the court is going to have to throw out, you know, all of the criteria that Obama has set. The
mm-hmm.
constitutionality of the trial, the judge
mm-hmm.
is going to have to throw all those things out before we even actually get into trial. So I don't think we even get to that point.
Incidentally, part of my post yesterday proves 1966 was a Supreme Court decision, Miranda versus Arizona, where a judge, you know, these activist judges, Supreme Court justice, opined that in other words, the long and short of it is, there's nowhere in the Fifth Amendment of our Constitution that says you have to read anything of that sort to anybody. You know, you must remain silent and everything else. There's nothing in the Fifth Amendment.
No. This, you know, was it you that I was having this argument about, or was it somebody else I was having this argument about as far as whether
me?
Was it you, Mark, this weekend on the constitutionality of certain decisions versus the...
Oh, that was me and you speaking.
Case law versus case law.
Yes.
Case law is case law, okay?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not an attorney. I only play one on TV, the radio, and on the phone.
That's okay.
But after spending the last 10 years sitting in the federal court, going through trials and hearings... at the federal level, and
mm-hmm.
not so many at the municipal level. We've had some
appellate,
at the federal level, which is actually what is going to be appropriate here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, case law, and let me relate this to bankruptcy law.
Mm-hmm.
When the bankruptcy law was changed in 2005,
mm-hmm.
by the way, legislation that got me out of the Republican Party the actual caving into that piece of crap legislation.
Yeah, we're all in a tank, both parties.
what it did, it didn't just change the law.
Mm-hmm.
What it did was it wiped out almost 30 years of case law. You know, every time Congress writes a law and they've misplaced
mm-hmm.
a comma or misspelled a word or misdirected a word,
mm-hmm.
you know, somebody has had to have a ruling about what that word or comma or missing comma has meant. And that case law is part of the law.
But not part of the Constitution, right?
No, it absolutely is. It's not in the sense that...
It is?
In the sense that what you have is... The Constitution is a framework.
Yeah.
Okay? It is the skeleton of our government. Now, from that skeleton, you need to put a skin on the outer side, which is going to be, you know, our federal laws. And then you're going to have to layer the inside with, you know, board and paint and carpeting and such. And that's your case lock. That's your case lock. Now, it's part of the structure. Is it the Constitution? No, it's not the steel beams of the Constitution. But it is a fundamental part of how the Constitution actually acts.
So may I ask you this question?
Day-to-day life.
May I ask you this question?
Sure.
The Supreme Court, from what I understand, when it was designed, it was designed to interpret law and interpret law. Period.
No.
Period.
Are you asking that the courts are supposed to interpret the law?
No, that's what they were designed to do. The Supreme Court was designed to interpret law. Period.
Yeah. That means,
right.
But
not create, not revise. In other words, what I'm saying is, if they interpret something to be, well, that's not quite how we understand it to be, don't they have to send it to Congress, and Congress then will put either an amendment forward to the states or whatever?
No. What you have is, you know, what we call, it's called black letter law. That's the written words that are part of the law.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And there's not a whole lot of block letter law, believe it or not. There's much more case law. In any case, what it is if a law was clear, okay, in the sense that everybody understood it completely, there would be no need for judges because on its face the issue would be decided. Okay, that's not the truth.
So, in your heart, you believe that our founders would put that unwielding kind of power into 9 people, that they could create and change and modify any law they so desire?
No, and I don't accept the premise. I don't accept the premise that the Supreme Court is changing laws. Now,
history has shown it again and again.
Let me phrase that in a way that's more clear. As a general rule, the Supreme Court does not do it. Now, is it possible for the Supreme Court to reach a decision that any rational or reasonable person would go, no way in hell is that an appropriate interpretation of the Constitution?
Yeah.
Hell yes.
Yeah.
And I can give you 2 of them, okay?
Most of their cases, probably.
No, I'm just going to give you 2 cases because everyone's going to know these 2 cases, and I don't think anybody's going to disagree with them, okay?
Sure.
The first one is actually from a very long time ago. It's called Dred Scott.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Know about it.
I think that was a horrifyingly bad decision. The second one, and it's not going to be Roe v. Wade. The second one is Kelo.
Yes. Absolutely.
You know, the second one is Kelo, and now you know Dred Scott was overturned. It took quite a while for it to happen, but it was overturned. So the Supreme Court can reach a better decision after the fact. Roe v. Wade was badly decided. I think it was perfectly correctly decided. My problem with Roe v. Wade was it should never have been there in the first place.
Well, you're right. You're right. And on that point, you're also clarifying my argument. Is that take Roe v. Wade for example, okay? And me and Tracy actually had a whole conversation about gay marriage and such. Social issues, like something like abortion, which is a very touchy subject. And things like gay manners, we have a 10th Amendment. Remember that thing, the 10th Amendment? Where anything not in the Constitution is supposed to be decided by the states, right? So again, who gives the Supreme Court the power to say every state in this union has to abide by Roe versus Wade? Why can't it be every state make your own law and decisions? That's the way it started.
Let me tell you why that there's some aspects about that. Okay, and while I do agree with the general movement on the 10th Amendment in most places,
but it's constitutional. It's not even a movement. It's a law.
No,
it's constitutional.
No, and let me explain to you why. And it's one of the reasons it's actually going to come up on the Supreme Court here in the next 2 or 3 months.
Yes.
The question is, your position, and I want you to understand my position about this. Your position says that if it's not in the U.S. Constitution, it should be left up to the states. Okay?
Well, wasn't that our founders' position?
But the question I have for you is, let's assume something is in the Constitution.
Yes.
Okay? does that mean that it is outside of the state's ability to do things?
Wait, you didn't. But my first question to you is, wasn't that our founders' intent?
I'm not going to talk to the founders' intent because you and I can spend the next 3 hours doing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
All right. My point is, right now we're going to have an argument in the Supreme Court. Actually, I think most of the arguments are happening. I think it's now we're waiting for the decision. The question.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The question is.
Shit.
Does the Second Amendment? Okay. Does the Constitution reach down into the states and force the states to behave constitutionally?
Liberal point of view.
Is it a liberal point of view?
It's a progressive point of view. Like the states are kindergarten kids that need to be taught by teacher what's right and wrong.
Okay.
I mean,
then your position.
States, don't you think the states are grown ups and they understand what's right for themselves?
No, absolutely positively not.
Okay.
And the Second Amendment is a perfectly good example of it. Yes. And we have a whole lot of states that have banned Second Amendment rights, explicitly in the Constitution or implicitly by the laws they put down there. And the question is, can a state take a fundamental basic right and restrict it? Or can the federal government come down and say this state law is unconstitutional because it restricts unnecessarily or incorrectly a basic right? The wording is basic right.
You want me to speak to that?
Sure.
Well, again, I understand what you're saying. As a matter of fact, I only became really more conservative over the last year. And what I'm saying, I guess to that point, I have 2 points, is that, first of all, the federal constitution, right, is what it is. It's what the federal government is limited, right? It's what limits our rights in the Bill of Rights. It's
our rights
against the federal government. What the federal government
Bill of Rights.
What the federal government cannot do to us and the states. For example, they can't abridge our free speech. They can't abridge our freedom of religion. The federal government, right? But in the beginning, even after the Constitution was ratified, some states had their own religions. So, again, it goes back, if you read back, that's the federal Constitution. So who gives the federal government the power to say to each state, wait, you have to apply what's in this federal Constitution to your Constitution? Do you follow what I'm saying?
I agree, and that is the argument in front of the Supreme Court.
That overrides all state sovereignty.
The argument in front of the Supreme Court is your position is correct. Your position is one of the two positions that are in front of the Supreme Court. Okay?
And you're not completely wrong either. I understand your position as well.
The other side of that is, each state is part of the United States has agreed that ratification process a long time ago to be bound by the Constitution. Okay. The question is, once a state has decided it will be bound by the U.S. Constitution, how much authority does the federal government have to reach down into the state to make sure the state abides by those strictures?
You have it backward. It's the states that created the federal government. Remember? The federal government.
No, it was not.
Okay.
No, we created the federal government. We created
right,
the federal 13, government.
13 sovereign states created the federal government.
We, the people, created...
But 13 sovereign states created the federal government.
No, 13 states signed on to the federal government.
Right.
No, listen, that's a really important difference, Okay? The 13 states did not create the federal government. We created the federal government. The people of the United States created the federal government, and then 13 state entities signed on to that constitution.
So you're saying they willingly signed away their state sovereignty at that point?
They gave up, like we did, when we agreed to the Constitution. We agreed to give the federal government a certain amount of power.
17 powers, right? For Congress.
That's correct. We gave them 17 powers. Okay?
Yes.
Explicit
powers.
We gave up some of our sovereignty.
Limited.
So that the federal government would have some authority to act.
Mm-hmm.
Not power, not right, authority to act.
Mm-hmm.
Once that was done, then the state said, we will become part of this Constitution and abide by, the Constitution. Now, that process, it is not settled.
Excuse.
230 years later, we're still not settled about things. And the reason we're not settled about things is things change.
Slavery,
now,
that was one of the big things.
I don't believe in a living constitution. Okay, I don't.
Yeah.
I believe the constitution is sets a certain set of principles together, and those principles, result in different policy positions as society changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you one of those policies. It's not necessarily federal; it's more state oriented, but it's one of those issues. And that was, up until about 60 or 70 years ago, the courts in this country held that when I got married to Roger, I became his property.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And that has only changed in the last 50 to 60 years, and it's taken a long time in many states to reach that point. Okay? Now, not property in the same sense as slaves were property. Different situation. But nonetheless, property. Okay?
Hmm.
So the process changes. Our system changes. All right, now, I'm going to stop. Okay? We've spent 25 minutes on what I consider to be a rather enjoyable topic that I could spend a whole lot of time doing so. But
the last thing you should consider when we stop talking about this, if according to your premise, and you can think about this when we're not done talking, what can Barack Obama, the Supreme Court, and Congress not do to the states then, according to your premise? I guess their power is unwielding and unlimited then.
No, it's not.
They
you
can skew
both,
anything they
both,
want in their favor.
You and I both agree that the federal government is limited by the powers that's been granted to it.
Is it?
The authorities. Absolutely. And yes. Does it overreach? Yes. Does it get carried away? Yes. Of course, we have Social Security and Medicare, which are both overreaching.
Right.
Okay.
Amen.
And there's even some arguments that the 16th Amendment was an overreach.
Oh, my God. That's one of the worst blows to our sovereignty right there.
Okay. So, there's lots of places. We don't have perfection in this country.
But that was an amendment. Understand the difference. When you get three-quarters of the states to agree on something, that is the process our founders gave us to change the Constitution.
Well, that doesn't make it right.
No, it doesn't make it right. And they were sold on something way different than what it's become. But the point is, our founders gave us a process to change the Constitution. Now, that doesn't give the Supreme Court.
They also gave us a process to interpret how the Constitution, how laws are applied to specific situations. And you and I disagree about how nine people reach their opinion about how that application is, how that application occurs.
Yeah.
But the reality is that's how our Constitution set the system up, so that nine people's opinion, and that's all it is, that's all it ever is nine people's opinion about how a law should react in a given set of circumstances, very specific circumstances.
But aren't they supposed to pass, and correct me if I'm wrong, aren't they supposed to pass that opinion over to Congress and let Congress legislate and debate?
No, that opinion is based upon the law as the legislation has put it into play.
Correct. Right. Exactly. They're supposed to interpret whatever law is in play, right?
And
but again,
their interpretation is the end.
So that is the law. Their interpretation is the law. You're saying
that interpretation is the law. Now,
okay.
Can the legislature go? Yeah. No, we're not going to let that stand. Absolutely.
Okay.
And we've seen it. We've seen it happen in California.
Uh-huh.
With Prop 8. When I said before the Supreme Court ruled that civil unions and regular marriage would be, I said before they ruled that they would rule that it was unconstitutional under California law to have civil unions and heterosexual marriage. I ruled that way. And, of course, when they did, the left just went, or the right just went berserk on activist judges. And I went, nope, that's the way California law is. They interpret it. It's a perfectly reasonable interpretation. And then when they wrote Prop 8 and Prop 8 passed, and, of course, the left took Prop 8, into trial, I absolutely guaranteed that the California Supreme Court would rule in Prop 8's favor, and let it stand, because the one thing that drove me crazy, the one thing that has driven me in my political career in the last 3 years is this fundamental concept. You said it. If the American people, if three-quarters of the states can agree that slavery is just the cat's meow, it is the thing we really need most in this country. Three-quarters of the American people can institute slavery, and they can pick whatever group they want to put into slavery and say, you're it.
Right.
And that's our Constitution. The Constitution of the United States allows us to take fundamental rights from Americans and say, nope, not yours, done, finished, over. That's a horrifying thing to me. Horrifying thing to me.
Mm-hmm.
But do I want our Constitution to change to prevent that? Nope.
Well,
I don't. But
exactly.
I just hope that Americans are smarter than that particular process. All right. Done. William.
Yes. I'm here.
All right. Now, Mark, you're welcome to stay on. I want to get into some things. I have a question for you guys. Has anybody paid any attention? In the last couple of days, has Haiti just disappeared off the news?
Oh, man. Big time.
Okay, so if Haiti has disappeared off the news, the question is, why?
Because
the
blood's dry.
Barack Obama's screwing up.
Because the blood's dry.
It's not profitable media-wise.
Well, sure.
Profitable media-wise.
If the blood is dry.
The media's in the business of making money.
The media is gone.
Right. There's no money for them right now. Just like Iraq. They weren't reporting on Iraq. That's people were dying, remember?
If it bleeds, it bleeds. Okay, so no more bleeding, just a lot of stink.
Yeah,
all right.
Let's talk about the teleprompter for a moment.
Teleprompter? Oh, Jesus, okay. Yeah.
This is going to come up tomorrow a little bit. And the only thing, I made a comment about it, and then there was some changing about it. Last week, Barack Obama went to Falls Church, Virginia, gave a little talk to six-year-olds, and then they had a picture of him standing in front of a teleprompter and a lectern with a Secret Service guy behind.
Yep.
Now, apparently, that was not when he was talking to the sixth graders.
Yeah, apparently.
Apparently, that was he went and talked to the sixth graders. We don't have pictures of that, but then he came out to talk to the press.
Yep.
All right. Now, none of that changes my question. One, why was the Secret Service guy standing 3 feet behind him?
That's a dangerous press out there, man. You just can't ever be too careful.
Okay.
He thought Fox News was around.
I suggested that the Secret Service was there to make sure no spitballs got shot at him.
Yeah,
that was a lot more.
The teleprompter might revolt. The teleprompter's going to revolt.
Yeah. But the question is, if he's just going to have, if he's just going to have a little presser with the press after this, what the hell does he need a teleprompter for?
Well, I, you know, in fairness to him, and it pains me to be fair to him, but nevertheless, in fairness to him, he was putting forth a policy position, and he needed to make sure that he got it right. Now, should he have done that with notes? Yeah. You know, come on, give me a break. He's got to, he has to know that he is being ridiculed over the teleprompter business.
But
you'd think that he'd get some 3x5 cards with the points that he wants to make, right? But he didn't. But he was enunciating a policy position, and he needed to get that right.
You know what? Sorry. You know,
maybe he was reading
this,
the ACLU
this,
talking
this
points.
Is, if he is so brilliant, so incredibly good,
yep.
Such a great speaker, if he can't do 5 minutes, you know, off of his top of his head.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry. Speech
givers, yeah, but understand the difference. There's a difference between giving a speech off a written, you know, something written and something out of memory. I mean, there's – I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying he is a great speaker, but maybe, you know, some people don't remember things like others do.
You know what?
I don't know.
Well, he's a great speaker.
Yeah.
Like a news anchor is a great journalist.
They're a great teleprompter reader, too.
Yeah,
perfect
right.
point.
Oh,
anchors.
You know,
anchors.
It's like
yeah.
it's like me going, you know, Robert De Niro was a damn good taxi driver.
They have to read well.
Yeah, right.
Read and enunciate well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's nothing. You know, I don't believe that Barack Obama is a good speaker. As a matter of fact, whenever he's, you know,
Contemporaneous.
He's shitty.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I do better than him.
Yep.
You know, I was thinking about.
You know, an hour a week, you and I, Bill, sit here and we yip yap for an hour off the top of our heads, and we're better than Barack Obama.
Yeah. and probably more memorable.
Well, people never forget me.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that yesterday. Joe Biden, right, is they would call him a gaffe machine, right?
Oh yeah.
The interesting thing about Biden is, and I'm not excusing it, and he's clearly said a couple offensive things I've heard, but Biden's generally, I think, an honest guy. Like he's just being honest, like too honest to be a politician, maybe, you know. I don't know, but Barack Obama often comes off as disingenuous, you know. However, and I say however, you know Barack Obama is being honest with you when he gets pissed off. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
When he gets pissed off, like you said, contemptuous, that's when he's being perfectly honest.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
he says some terrible things when he gets that way, too.
Yeah, really bad gaffes, but he's being honest.
They said, you know, Mark Levin had somebody on the radio, and I've said this before. You know, when you get somebody that's just plain mean,
yeah.
And you really want to rock them.
Yeah.
You know, you
mm-hmm.
get into big arguments. You really want to rock them. You want to really
right.
rock somebody that's got a mean streak on there. You know, when
that's
they
right.
say something, laugh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
you get somebody mad, you're going to get the truth.
If you don't get them coming out at you with fisticuffs, and if
right.
they don't just shut down, you're just going to have a whole lot of fun. So.
Yeah.
Now, this is what I want the GOP to do tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
I said this over the weekend. I said that I'm going to watch the State of the Union address simply because I want to see the GOP, when Barack Obama says something that everyone goes, yeah, lie, I want the entire GOP to stand up and say, you lie.
You lie.
Okay? I want the whole GOP to stand up and say, you lie. But
could you imagine that?
that would be great. I mean, frankly,
that would be
myself,
a parliamentary moment for sure.
Yep.
I would spend every penny of my life to see Nancy Pelosi's face in the event that the whole GOP stands up and goes, you lie. You know,
we should
Nancy
have something that
Pelosi
works on algorithms.
Nancy Pelosi's Botox would just explode.
Yes, it would.
Okay, so.
Like old cement, right? When it gets rained on.
Yeah. All right. So I, you know, laugh. You know, you lie or laugh. All right. So let's look, let's think. We only got about 15 minutes. We got less than 15 minutes. All right. Let's talk about State of the Union.
Yes.
Unemployment is up 4%. Deficit, $2 trillion. The debt is up $2.4 trillion since Barack Obama won his election. Not since he became president, but since he won the election.
Yep.
Sickening.
With $4 trillion more expected over the next 10 months.
Yep.
Okay. Revenues to the federal government are down 22%.
Yep.
Which increases deficits, right?
Which increased deficit. You know, it's Barack Obama, I think his projection was that revenues were going to be down like 16%, and we're already blowing through the bottom of those. Okay?
Yeah.
There are, you know, I couldn't come up with the right number for this. There are at least three states on the brink of bankruptcy, if not already bankrupt. I know California, I know Michigan, I know Illinois.
Yep.
And New York, I think.
Well, and there are two things that you left out of that whole thing.
Okay.
Sales taxes are down 14%.
Across the board, across the country.
Across the country.
Across the country.
House prices fell by 5.3% year on year in November.
And housing has still not come back up.
Nope.
What about commercial real estate? What's that doing?
Don't know. That was the S&P Case-Shiller numbers.
Now, commercial real estate, you know, my opinion is that that right now Bernanke is hoping to God the economy is actually coming back, because then they're going to be able to deal with the fact that they've got, you know, 500 or 600 banks that are insolvent.
Yep.
But if the economy doesn't come back, and, of course, Bill and I, you and I have talked about this a lot. We don't believe it's going to.
No.
Then he's got 500 insolvent banks that are just going to do terrible things.
Nine of them have already failed this year.
Which was more than 06 and 07 combined. Yeah!
Do you guys believe, I've thought about this the other day. Do you guys believe that Ben Bernanke believes in free market capitalism?
No.
No.
Thank you. And he's, listen, his own words, is an expert in the Great Depression, right?
Yeah, yeah.
His own words. Well, that was Keynesian economics used by FDR.
Yep.
All right.
So tomorrow,
State of the Union is going to be, I expect by the end of the night, people are, you know, they always come up with how many times, you know, the president got an applause.
Mm-hmm,
I think they're going to probably count how many lies he's telling. I expect the number to be double digits, personally, myself.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Yeah.
All right. So I do want to get into Mark and I, as Mark alluded to, we had a big conversation over the weekend over gay marriage. I'm not going to get into it. The trial is still going on in California.
Mm-hmm.
The court has... there was some fireworks today. The court has asked for closing arguments tomorrow, tomorrow or Friday. So that will be wrapping up this week on its way to the Supreme Court probably by the end of the year or early next year. But the other
Why is it going to the Supreme Court now?
What?
Sorry, no, you said you didn't want to elaborate much. That's okay.
Yeah, it's going to continue to go on to the Supreme Court. So, although I believe if the Supreme Court's smart, the Supreme Court's not going to get involved in it.
Yeah, I don't.
It
I
should
hope
not get involved in it, actually.
Thank you.
The other big conversation I had with somebody over the weekend was the fair tax. Okay.
Oh boy.
We've talked about it a lot. I'm just going to say this really, really simply. You know, we can have all kinds of debates and discussions about the relative merits of the fair tax versus a flat tax versus the current system, okay? The only thing, okay, that, you know, even if the fair tax were perfect in every way, okay, I would still oppose it on the premise that it takes a government check and puts it into everybody's hands every month.
Yep.
Hmm?
Absolutely.
For no other reason. The idea that every American household becomes dependent, and yes, it will be dependent. It may take 10, it may take 20 years, but the simple fact of the matter is every single household in the United States will become dependent upon that check, and politicians will use everything in their power to make sure that check grows every year.
Yep.
That is a nightmare, and it is exactly what the left has wanted for every day, what we have complained healthcare would be, which is the dependence of the middle class upon the federal government for, you know, an entitlement. That's what it would be. It is a horrible, nightmarishly bad idea just on that alone. And
it's
fight the fair tax in, you know, against everyone because of that.
It's a flat tax. And you got big people, Michael Reagan, Mike Huckabee, they're pushing it hard,
fair
tax. Huckabee, Reagan.
I know. It just absolutely amazes me that anybody can look at that and say that's a good deal. I mean, any time a government takes more than it needs for its constitutional mandates, it's wrong.
Sure.
They have taken money out of the economy, on the one hand, so that they can give it back to somebody. That's just wrong.
Wealth redistribution. Obviously.
Yeah. Sure.
All right. So, we're going to have that conversation. That conversation is going to come back up again.
Yep.
I foresee it in the next several months. In my opinion, any conservative, supposedly conservative Republican running for any seat in the House or the Senate that supports the fair tax is a killer for me as far as support is concerned.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Can a flat tax be, my closing question is, can a flat tax be administered at state level instead of federal government level?
Well, the answer is yes, if they do it the way that I think they should do it.
See, I want the states to remit revenues to the federal government as opposed to the federal government since 1913 just taking it, you know?
Yes, one of the things that Bill, did we talk about my acreage tax? We talked about that a long time ago, right?
No.
Acreage?
Right. Yeah, the general idea is that the federal government set a tax rate on every acre in the United States.
Mm.
And that the federal government, that would be the sole income.
Oh, yeah, we did. Yes, we did.
Yeah, we did. Okay.
Yeah.
So, Mark, you and I can have a conversation about that. Maybe we'll have a whole show about it at some point.
Uh-huh.
It's something we should do that around middle April.
The Constitution says just do it according to the census. Apportion it according to the census. It's the same idea.
It is. But at the same token, the reason I disagree with that is that suggests that the federal government has increased costs by an increase of population. And the federal government does not have increased costs by an increase in the population. The states have increased costs by increase in population. Whereas the federal government, its primary goal is to, cover the whole country, and the whole country doesn't grow every year.
So yours is more like a geographic type tax.
Correct.
Basically.
That's
interesting.
In any case, I want to recount, here we are 3 weeks or so into the new year, two of my predictions have been already failed.
Uh-oh.
Scott Brown, I said, would lose.
Yes.
Hmm.
And I said that there would be a quick vote in the House on health care reform.
Yes. Yep.
So
I failed
on both of those.
Yep.
I failed. That's fine.
Oh, well.
I failed on both of those.
That's okay.
Those are both okay things.
Yep.
I did, and I'm going to lose on this one too, but it's going to be kind of a nice thing. I said that global warming has died, but they're not going to pronounce it dead until about 2017.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
I think they're probably going to pronounce it dead by the end of 2010.
Yeah.
at the rate that they're digging out information and such like that, it is pretty clear that this climate gate is of I hate to use the comments, but a conspiracy of global proportions, but
oh yeah,
it is clearly a significant thing. And one of the things that just drives me crazy, in 1975, the United States had 6,500 official weather stations.
Okay.
In 2007, we have 1,400.
Oh, really?
Now, those 1,400 are very interesting because 1,396 of them
mm-hmm.
are in the lower 49 states.
Really?
So that will tell you what's been going on with that little goodie.
Yes,
indeed. And then the last thing, Butch Porter, Chairman of the Executive Committee, American Conservative Party,
mm-hmm.
And I had a fairly long conversation over the weekend, and we were talking about this idea that we are losing, even though we are winning a lot of the debates right now,
mm-hmm.
in many ways we're losing them because we are still accepting the wrong premise. The premise being, in one case, healthcare reform.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I said it over the weekend. The only health reform bill that's good is a dead healthcare reform bill.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Kill it. Drive it.
You know they're still talking about pushing it through. Believe it or not.
There. If you start with the premise that the healthcare system needs reform.
Mm-hmm.
We've lost.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's accepting the compromise position before we start, not
exactly.
The principal position.
Exactly.
Okay? We
cost
have got
needs to be brought down, period. Right?
We have got to change the debate. You know, we've got to change the debate from the premise that something needs to be done to the principle it's not government's job to do it.
Exactly.
The best thing they do, the federal government is so great at creating emergencies, aren't they? The sky's falling, the sky's falling.
Yeah. Yeah.
They get everybody nervous, and then they go like apeshit, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
They like to create crisis.
I agree. You bet.
So, Mark, it was a pleasure having you on tonight.
Thank
yep.
you. Pleasure is mine.
We got into a nice conversation. We got to do some faster talking than the tweets, but that works out too.
Yep.
And I will catch you on the rest of it. Catch you back on tweets and otherwheres.
Yes.
And yes, I will look up your blog.
Great talking.
Take a read. William?
Yes.
I think it's rather interesting that I don't think anybody expects this State of the Union speech tomorrow to go very well for Barack Obama.
I don't think it will. I think he's going to put on a good face. I think he's going to say a lot of pretty words that aren't going to signify anything. And that's going to be the end of it, and then we'll get the feedback on that.
Okay. I'm going to do a quick shout-out because we've got 30 seconds.
Okay.
Mark, thanks. Just me, Pammy, Arkansas Traveler, those that followed Part 68, thanks for listening. William, let's hope that our production's problems don't have the same problem next week.
Yes.
And, yes, I will be listening tomorrow night. How about you?
Yep, I'm going to be listening. You betcha. I am not drinking, though.
We'll talk to you all next week.
All righty.
All right, green room time.
Cool.
Let's see if this hangs on. I did touch every basic thing that I wanted to talk about. Although Mark and I did use up a lot more time than I expected to, you know, his problem is exactly the same problem that I have with a whole lot of other people. It's the idea that when a court ruling goes against what you perceive to be the correct response, that
mm-hmm.
is, in fact, judges being activists.
Yeah.
And, you know, it drives me crazy because, you know, the first thing that happens is you have an expectation of what some decision should be rather than paying attention to the arguments that have been presented. We had another example in the last week. Well, we didn't talk about it on the show, but we'll talk about it a little bit here.
Okay.
And that is corporate free speech.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Another knife in the gut of McCain-Feingold.
Oh, yeah.
As it should be. Now, the left is, as we all know, not a big fan of free speech. So they're, of course, all up in arms about the fact that corporations can now have free speech.
Yeah, right.
As if they couldn't
before, but nevertheless.
You know, I don't think I've ever asked you this. What's your position on the concept of corporate individualism?
I am really torn on that. I would not have a problem on a principled basis of saying free speech applies to people, and given that they have a constitutional right to band together, freedom of association and all that kind of stuff, then they can do that, but it ought not to be through their union, through their corporation, through anything else. I.e., if the 912ers and the MoveOn.orgs wanted to band together and say, hey, we think we've got a better idea, that's great. I don't have a problem with that. If we say a corporation or a union, as a corporation or a union, wants to get involved in that on behalf of their members, I think you can make a case that says, nah, they really shouldn't be able to.
I think you know, and I think some of the people that listen know, I am not a big fan of corporations as an individual.
Right.
That said, I think you can create a fair amount of protections that allow corporations to behave in ways that are not interfered with the free market system and free enterprise system.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have a problem with the idea that you can limit a corporation's speech simply by the content. And that,
yeah.
I think functionally that's my problem, is if you believe that a corporation should have the right to advertise, then there's no reason in the world why anybody should disagree with that point, then what you're regulating is the content.
Yes.
And that, I think, is a huge, big problem.
Yep.
I don't think you can do that.
Yep.
And therefore, you know, the Supreme Court's ruling, in my opinion, is the correct one.
Yes.
Because what you're doing is you're limiting speech on content, and I don't think that the government can regulate speech on content except for in really, really rare
egregious cases,
circumstances,
yeah,
for any entity.
Yep.
Individual, corporation, organization.
Yep.
I think anytime the government does that, it's bad.
Yes.
I've always considered McCain-Feingold to be a nightmarish piece of legislation that should have been strangled in the crib before it ever got anywhere.
Well, you know, and it absolutely amazes me that that was a hard-fought contest in the House and the Senate. It was signed into law by Bush, who said, well, I don't really have a problem signing it because the Supreme Court will find it unconstitutional. So why didn't he just veto it and make him go through the process of overriding his veto, and they couldn't have done that. And then the Supreme Court says, oh, yeah, that's fine. And it's like, what? How can you do that? Congress shall make no law. How tough is it to understand that? But they did.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm happy to see it turn over as far as the left is concerned. You know, some of the biggest organizations that have been dumping money into campaigns, you know, have been on the left side for the last half a dozen. You know, my problem is, you know, whenever you try to legislate campaign financing, the law of unintended consequences says that it's going to be just absolutely a bad idea.
You know, if they had confined themselves to financing, they would have been fine. I mean, I'm not sure that I would have liked it, but that they clearly have an ability to do that. But they went beyond the financing to who could say what about whom when. And that's just clearly wrong.
Well, and that's why, you know, you don't support, you know, public financing of campaigns, do you?
On my tax return, no. I mean, I don't.
In principle, you don't, do you?
Oh, no. No. I mean, I don't check off on it, and, you know, I think it's probably a bad idea. If they wanted to clean up the financing of campaigns and elections, it's really simple. All they have to do is say, you can take as much money as you want from any citizen in the United States, as long as
you
report it.
You just have to tell us who did it.
You got to tell us who did it. And it's got to be on an easily searchable database on the web where everybody can get at it.
Yeah, I agree.
End of story.
You know,
okay.
You know, somebody wants to give you $10. I want to see their name on the piece on a piece of paper up on so anybody can read. Somebody wants to give you $10 million. That's fine.
Yep.
I want to see their name up on a piece of paper that says they gave
$10 million. I mean,
the
joke that's going around on Twitter is, we think congressmen ought to have to wear logo stickers like the race car drivers do.
I like that idea. And, of course, but you end up with situations where, like the people in Prop 8, you know, where they're screaming because, you know, people that contributed are being targeted.
Yep.
You know.
But you know what? We have laws against that already.
Well, it's, you know what? Here's my problem, okay?
Yeah.
If in the court system, especially criminal courts,
yep,
you have the right to face your accuser.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. If somebody wants to, you know, promote a law, I think it's perfectly okay for people to know that I'm supporting that.
Yes.
You know, if you want to publicly support a law that does anything, I don't care what it is.
Yeah, doesn't
matter. It doesn't make any difference. You know, then I think I, as a person that might be impacted by that law, I think I should know who the hell, you know, wants to do that.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with
that.
Disclosure, transparency. And that's what drives me crazy is the fact that, you know, there's a whole lot of people on the right that are screaming bloody murder that they want the health care reform, you know, debate, you know, negotiations to be transparent.
Yeah, on C-SPAN and the whole thing. Yeah, yeah.
But you can't have a public trial be transparent because it might have a chilling effect on the people.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry.
A little
sorry.
Dichotomy there, huh?
Yeah. I'm sorry. You know, if you're going to, you know, have a public trial, and you're going to stand up on a public trial and say, I oppose this, you know, the fact that everybody knows that you're going to oppose it,
mm-hmm.
you know, if that's chilling for you, then you have a choice to make.
Here's my take on that, Tracy. If every trial is televised, I'm for it. I don't have a problem with it. If we're going to pick and choose which ones are televised, now I got a problem.
I agree, and that's one of the reasons why the Supreme Court shut it down was because it didn't follow the specific guidelines that they had set for
yep.
federal appellate court
yep.
trials to be things. So I don't have any problems with the fact that they shut it down.
Right.
But I do have problems with the people on the right that objected to it, you know, as a principle that it shouldn't be publicized. I think that was ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it was too. You know, the other thing though is, we have already seen what happens by virtue of the violence that was done, as to those people that were targeted because of their support of Proposition 8. Now, if those trials are held swiftly, then okay, I don't have a problem with it. If those trials either are not prosecuted or they are dragged through so long through the criminal justice system, then I got a problem.
Yeah, anybody that you know, I don't mind somebody saying, you know, this restaurant owner opposed Proposition 8, I think we should boycott the restaurant. You know, I don't have a problem with that. Somebody want to stand outside the restaurant on a public point, you know, place and say, this restaurant owner, you know, voted for Proposition 8, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with that. Somebody want to stand out in front of somebody's private residence, you know, yelling and screaming, you know, horrible
mm-hmm.
names because they did it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I got a huge problem with that.
Absolutely.
I
got yep.
a huge problem with that.
Yep.
So,
and, yeah. I, you know, typically the boycotts don't work. I mean, because
right.
what happens is you get a backlash and then everybody goes there that supported it, and those that didn't go there don't support it, don't go there, and so it's all a big wash. Maybe
yeah,
even better than a wash, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of boycotts.
No.
But, you know, that's some people, you know, that's what they got to do, and that's what they want to do. And
yeah,
so
that's
it.
Fine. I don't care. I'm good with it.
You know, but again, all of this falls back under the same argument that I've been making all the time. If you're going to hold a principled position, then you better hold it, you know, through all the possible iterations.
Oh, yeah.
Otherwise,
yeah.
it's not a principle. Otherwise, it's just a,
yeah.
you know, you want to have a particular opinion on a certain, you know, issue. That's fine, too. I don't have any
yeah.
problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't tell
mm-hmm.
me that it's a principled position.
Exactly.
This is a principal position. Yeah, but you didn't
yeah.
agree with it here. Well, I didn't like that result.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, okay.
It's
well,
not a principal
fine.
Position.
No,
well,
I understand.
Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that was like, did you read the story today about the attorney that refused apparently a full body scan going
no.
into a courthouse looking for weapons? And
no.
he said, whoops. That, my friends, is a violation, and you can't do that. So we'll see where that goes. I think it's about time.
Except for in the front of every single, what, was it a federal courthouse or a state?
I don't know. Didn't say.
Because before you enter every single federal installation, building, or area,
yeah.
there is a big sign that says, entry onto this facility, into this building, is subject to a complete search and, what's the right way phrasing of it?
Yeah, I remember the statement. My only comment to that is that doesn't. I mean, they can say that all they want. It doesn't make it right.
Doesn't make it right, but it makes it a law, unless you know.
I don't know if it's a law.
It is.
I don't know that it's a law.
It's an administrative law.
In that case, it's eminently challengeable.
Sure, you can challenge it.
Yeah.
You're also not going to get into the federal facility. You can challenge it in the court, but you're not going to get into the federal facility without being subject to seizure, search.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you know, we're dealing with that here locally in my little county, my little 15,000-person county.
How so?
And to go into the courthouse to do any kind of business, you have to go through this. I'm assuming that it's a magnetometer. It's not a full body scan. But the point of that is, you mean if I want to go in and register to vote, I have to go through this? I'm sorry. I don't think that's right.
Yeah. Going into the federal courthouse around here, you have to take off your coat. Your shoes have to be checked. They have a special little device for checking your shoes.
Yeah.
And all electronics have to be shown to be on or functional. And you have to go through a very large, long scanner device.
Mm-hmm.
Not your typical little archway.
Right.
Bigger archway, to go through. And our little courthouse has 4 marshals at the front door.
Hmm. Wow.
2 where you can get to them and 2 behind the glass.
Got it. Yep.
And, Madison is not exactly what I would call a hotbed of...
yeah, right.
dangerous people, but...
Yeah, what the hell?
So, okay.
Yep.
SCOTUS tomorrow. I don't have a whole lot of anything else, unless you have something.
No, I'm pretty much done.
I'm
gonna watch the SOTU tomorrow, and it's really more like shut the fuck up. But oh well.
I told Victoria that I said it's SCOUS versus ST.
Exactly. So we'll see how it plays out. I think that he's going to give a really great speech, and he will have no memorable lines in it. And the concept of this freezing of federal expenditures is a laughable moment.
I'm going to freeze discretionary spending.
Yeah.
Unless I got to keep my discretion about it.
Yeah, exactly. it's pretty crazy. Okay, kiddo.
I'm going to save $25 billion out of our $2.9 trillion deficit. Don't you think I'm smart?
Yeah, right. Okay, Urkel, you just go ahead and do that. God.
Do not make fun of Urkel like that.
Yeah, I know. I shouldn't have done that. That was terrible.
Oh, right.
God. Okay,
thank you for joining us in the green room, everybody.
Yep. Yep.
William, you and I will have a conversation next week.
Okay.
In the meantime, pay attention, people.
Yeah. It's dangerous.
Good night, Bill.
Good night, Tracy. Have a good one.
You too.